Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today. I am your host, John Scott. I hope everybody's doing well. It's July 20th. The smoke has finally cleared a little bit here in Traverse City. We've been getting some wind lately. I don't know if you're up abreast on the issue, so to speak, but man, oh man, the last week it's just been crazy, crazy hazy, crazy smoke here in upper lower Michigan and all throughout the Midwest and even on the East Coast and everywhere in the States because of all the fires that are going on in Canada. So I'd like to sit here and complain about all the smoke, but I know people up in Ontario and further west are having the darndest time with these fires. So gosh, I hope they clear up. I hope everybody's safe and staying somewhat, you know, sane and safe, because fire is, it's crazy stuff. But because of all the commotion of the smoke, and I moved platforms. I went from Acast to Libsyn to trying to generate some money for this podcast. So you might see different ads and this and that and listening if you've been listening for a long time. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But the big guy, kids need some diapers. Still, unfortunate. Potty training takes a lot of time in the Scott household, but you gotta put food on the table. You gotta put diapers on the bums. That's just how it works. But I apologize for not doing an episode last week. That's just what happened. The smoke, the transition, and everything going on. And of course, I desperately wanted to, because it was one of the greatest days of the year for me. Steve Yzerman quit. And a lot of you probably think, oh, John's probably ecstatic. And I was. But then the more I thought about it and the more I sat on it, I felt empty. And I felt like we were owed something as fans, because Steve Yzerman did the cowardice move. He just kind of snuck away in the middle of the night. And he left us all without really saying much. It was almost as if he knew the writing was on the wall. And he just said, I got to get out of here. And instead of facing the firing squad and playing out the season and going to war with the team that he constructed, the team that he molded together over the last 7 years, and just owning up to his decisions, he just said, oh, nope, I can't do it. The season's around the corner, a month and a half away. And the coward that is Steve Yzerman said, gone, can't do it. Sorry. Botched the Dylan Larkin situation, botched the draft, botched free agency, botched the last 7 years of my tenure as a GM here in Detroit. I can't do it. So I'm going to sneak away in the middle of the night and put out this pansy little thing. Oh, I'm going to step down and be more of an advisor role. Newsflash, Steve, nobody wants your ass as an advisor. As a hockey player, top notch. One of the greatest hockey players to ever lace him up, a born leader, the heartbeat of your team, just oozes every tangible asset, every intangible asset you can name. That's Steve Yzerman. As a GM, you're terrible. You're fired. You're gone. You suck. So this whole kind of nuance and this whole softening of the blow is like, oh, I met with Chris Illich and, you know, the leadership, and we've decided that it's a good time for Steve to step down. Really? This is a good time for Steve Yzerman to step down. Right now. After the draft. After free agency. After just boondoggling the Dylan Larkin situation. This right now. This July, whatever it was, 14th, 15th, 16th, this day is a good time for Steve to step aside. No, just fire him. Just fire him. That's what we all want you to do. Instead of this PR, HR, we don't want to upset anybody's feelings, this whole millennial crap, fire his ass and move on. He deserves it. The guy should have been fired 4 years ago. He sucks. He stinks. I've said it for years, and everybody defended him. Oh, just give him some time. The Yzer plan. Oh, he took over a bad situation. No shit. Every GM takes over a bad situation. There's never been once in the history of GMs that I know about that a GM took over a good situation. That's why they're a new GM. So everybody takes over a bad situation. So that whole argument is out the window. Oh, he just didn't have enough time. There was bad contracts. He was just trying to reorganize, and there was just a lot of pressure, and it was a lot of stress, and he couldn't handle it. He just needs another year, and then another year, and another year, and another year. Oh, but he drafted Mo Sider. The guy sucks at his job. He needed to be gone a long time ago. And instead of facing his consequences and just owning up to it and say, you know what? My bad. I didn't do a good job. I'm fired. He just takes the cowardly way out and doesn't say anything and sneaks away in the middle of the night. Well, too bad, baby. Not on this show. Because I got receipts and it's time. I think I did a show on you a couple weeks ago saying the state of the Red Wings and why you're just atrocious at your job. Well, he must have been listening, Chris Ilitch, and Steve Yzerman must have been listening, because the Detroit Red Wings have finally come to their senses and parted ways with him. But how did we get here? Because it's been a long time. And I will be the first to admit, Steve Yzerman does do some good things as a GM. He understands how to build the team somewhat. He doesn't kowtow to the players. He plays hardball. I enjoy that sometimes. He's very protective of his picks. He likes to build through the draft. He doesn't overspend in free agency. He is a very conservative GM. And me being who I am, I'm a conservative cat. I get that. But you got to play the game. You got to play ball. You got to overpay sometimes. You got to go out and take a risk. You got to swing for the fences. And in his 7 years as a GM of the Detroit Red Wings, an original six, Steve Yzerman was going to lead him back to the promised land. He went to the playoffs a total of 0 times. His record was under 500. 224 wins, 251 losses, and 9 ties. It was an abject failure as his tenure as a GM. So let's break it all down. His draft picks. And people, you know, who are proponents of Steve Yzerman go, well, like, he had Mo Sider, Lucas Raymond, Simon Edvinson, Casper, Augustin. He's got great draft picks. But when you look at the grand scheme of things, when you look at other players who were drafted at the same time as a Mo Sider, as the same pick of a Lucas Raymond, that argument falls apart. Because going back, the 6th overall pick, which Moritz Sider was, and yes, it came out of nowhere. Who's this big German defenseman he's picking off the board? 2019, his first full tenure as GM of the Detroit Red Wings. What is this crazy man doing? What does he know that we don't? People were calling for his heads. This Mo Sider's never going to make it. It's too big. It's a man's game. Well, it turned out it was a great pick. Then all of a sudden he went from pariah to prophet. It's like, what did he know that we didn't? Well, let's look back at the 6th overall pick in the NHL. Simon Edvinson, 2021, pretty good player. Jamie Drysdale, 2020, pretty good player. Mo Sider. Philippe Zadina, that guy sucks. He was a Red Wings pick, by the way. Cody Glass, not so good. But then you got Matthew Tkachuk. You got Sean Monahan. You got Hampus Lindholm. You got Mika Zibanejad. You got Oliver Ekman-Larsson. You got Sam Gagner. You got Derek Brassard. You have Al Montoya going back to 2004. You keep going. It's Mikko Koivu, Scotty Upshaw, Scott Hartnell, Daniel Tkachuk. Like, good hockey players. Ryan Smith going back to the Oilers in 1994, for Pete's sake. So the fact that Steve Yzerman managed to get a good pick at the 6th overall spot, it's good, but it's not like revolutionary. It's not like, oh my goodness, he did? That's fantastic. And when you look at that 2019 draft, it was loaded with talent. It wasn't as if, you know, he just picked a cherry out of a bushel of just terrible draft picks. And all of a sudden it was, wow, how did he do that? The 2019 draft was absolutely loaded with talent. And if it wasn't Mo Sider, it could have been Dylan Cousins. It could have been Trevor Zegras. It could have been Matt Boldy. It could have been Cole Caulfield. It could have been Peyton Krebs and Alex Newhook and Thomas Harley and down the list, so on and so forth. So, listen, Mo is a good pick. But for everybody blowing smoke up his behind saying, oh, Mo Sider, Mo Sider, it was a ballsy pick that ended up working out. But if this is your first go around as a GM and you wanted a defenseman, you know, there was other good defensemen out there. Thomas Harley went to the Dallas Stars at 18. Philip Broberg went to the Oilers at number 8. I know Mo Sider is better than both those guys, but I'm just saying, you know, it is what it is. The number 6 overall pick typically ends up being a solid NHL player. Well, Lucas Raymond, the very next year in 2020 at 4th overall, John, he's a stud. Stop. The 4th overall pick, this is well documented. It's a high-end pick. Will Smith, Luke Hughes, Lucas Raymond, Bowen Byram, Brady Tkachuk, Cale Makar, Mitch Marner, Sam Bennett. Shut up. The 4th overall pick's always a good player. All you Detroit fans who are sniffing his jock need to just get a grip. The 4th overall pick is always a stud. And when you look at that draft, it was a hell of a draft. You got Byfield, Stützle, Raymond, Sanderson, Drysdale, Marco Rossi, Perfetti, Seth Jarvis, Dylan Holloway. Like, it was a good draft. Not for the Chicago Blackhawks. Lucas Reichel. That guy sucks, man. He's playing. Where's he playing? The Berlin Polar Bears right now. Or not, that's where he was drafted from. Lucas Reichel. That's a very bad pick, Chicago Blackhawks. Suck on that, Kyle Davidson. But it's just, what I'm trying to get at is from what I've been reading and what I've been looking at and what I've been hearing, everybody falls back on, well, he was a really good draft guy. He was really good at evaluating talent. He could see young players and he would know how good they were going to be. He knew what he was doing. That was his gift. Not really. When you look at his overall drafts, minus those three players, Edmondson, Raymond, and Sider, it's a lot of what ifs. It's a lot of what could be's. And looking at the number one overall or the first round picks like Marco Kasper, I don't think he works out. He's a good player, but I don't think he's going to be that high-end guy that everybody hopes he's going to be. Nate Danielson, Axel Sandin, Palika, I don't think those guys are going to be, you know, the difference makers that every Detroit fan wants them to be, because they fall around that 10 to 20 range. Nygaard, I'm sorry, I don't think he's that guy. I don't know about Carter Bearer. We'll see how that pans out. And they obviously didn't have a first-round draft pick? They traded it to Justin Falk, but I think they might have had one this year from another trade. J.P. Hurlbert, who the hell knows who that kid is. But I don't think he was that good at drafting. And if you're a GM and you have 7 years with a team, you better damn well hit on a couple draft picks. And the fact that he hit on 3 in 7 years for a non-playoff team, like, come on. Honestly, come on. But I don't think that was his biggest fault. I don't think that was the reason why Steve Yzerman failed. The reason why I believe he failed was his free agent signings. Or should I say lack thereof. This guy, for whatever reason, would not open up the piggy bank. He would not go for it. He just hated it. And I don't know why. And when you look at all of his free agent signings from 2019 to 2025, it's almost embarrassing. Because it's not like this team didn't have a lot of money to spend. Oh, yes, I know. Well, he took over. It was a bad situation when he took over. He had Abdelkader and Jimmy Howard and Darren Helm and Trevor Daley and Sam Gagner and Dylan Larkin and Franz Nielsen and all these bad contracts. I get it. But those were shed pretty early in his tenure. Oh, but Danny DeKeyser, and he had some guys retain cap with Mike Green and Eric Kaufman. Eric Comrie. I know that. But 2 years into his tenure as GM, those were all gone. And you know what he did with the money? All that free agent, the salary cap space, and he was just gone from Danny DeKeyser, gone from all these guys. You know who he signed? Andrew Kopp. 5 years, $28 million. Ben Chiarot. 4 years, $20 million. Dominic Kubalik, David Perron, Olli Maatta, JT Compher, 5 for $25. Justin Hall, 3 for $10. Patrick Kane, yeah, I get that worked out. Vladimir Tarasenko, sucked. Name one player that I just listed that was a difference maker. That's a guy who's going to move the needle. There's good players, like, I get it. Kopp is good. Compher is good. Vladislav Namestnikov. Like, who? Bobby Ryan in the back nine of his career. The back one. Thomas Greiss. Troy Stetcher. Oh. Not really inspiring signings. And that was his downfall. Listen, he had many downfalls. But I think that was the main one. He had the opportunity to build around these young players. He had a young Mo Sider. He had a young Lucas Raymond. He had a bunch of money to spend. But instead of optimizing their entry-level contracts and building off of those good young players, which we see teams do all the time, he decided to just play the long game. We're going to wait this out and see how this goes. We're not going to jeopardize our future by signing long-term contracts with free agents. We'll see how that goes. And this is where you end up. You end up in the middle of the pack, signing middle of the pack free agents. And then your young players go, why the hell am I here if we're not going to go all in? And then you put yourself in a situation where you have all of these middle of the road contracts and you have all these young star players that need new contracts, but they don't know if they want to stay. Because why would you? If you're Mo Sider and you're looking at this team and you go, do I really want to re-sign here? If you're Lucas Raymond and you go, why do I want to stay here? If you're Alex DeBrincat, why do I want to stay here? What have you done to show me that this is a winning team? And that's what happened to Dylan Larkin. He was the face of this franchise. Check that. He is the face of this franchise. Local kid, grew up playing in the U.S. program, went to Michigan, signed with his hometown team, born in Michigan. It should have been a match made in heaven, absolute match made in heaven. But it wasn't, because he watched year after year after year Steve Yzerman just do nothing and sit on his hands. And the frustrating part, I'm guessing, for Dylan Larkin was that everybody kissed his ass. Everybody said, oh, he's doing great. Trust Steve. He knows what he's doing. And they would critique Dylan. And they'd go, oh, you didn't score in 15 games. Oh, you didn't make the playoffs. Oh, you know, you're struggling. When we need you most, you know, you shut down. And I get that. That's justified. But the same criticism wasn't applied to Steve Yzerman. He got a pass year after year after year. Oh, he took over a bad team. Oh, he's waiting for the right time. Oh, he's saving our prospects. Oh, he doesn't want to trade our draft picks. Oh, he doesn't want to extend the contract to a guy maybe too long of term. But when comes the point where you go, you suck, you screwed up, Steve. You blew your opportunity. When does that turn about? Because now look at our team. Sider makes 8. Raymond makes 8. Larkin makes 8. 8. DeBrincat makes 7, almost 8. And we're not a playoff team. So what do we do? All of our young players that we had locked up on an entry-level contract for 3 years under $1 million, we did not maximize that. We didn't sign them to a decent contract when we had the chance to. And now we're just kind of in this no man's land that where nobody wants to be. And my captain, who put trust in you, who said, yeah, let's go, I'm ride or die, I'm going to sign a big ticket here with you, Steve, you kind of threw him under the bus. And now he's asked for a trade. And instead of trading him, you play hardball and you go, I don't know, we'll see. And I know I'm playing both sides here because I said Larkin should have maybe opened up his span and this and that. But Steve plays a big part in this too. He's probably a prick to deal with in the room. He's probably a terrible guy to deal with in the office when he's talking to Dylan Larkin because he's got a huge ego. He loves him some him, and nobody has ever challenged him as far as I know. I've talked to guys in the organization. I know the players who are just below him. And it was Steve Yzerman's show. And so when Dylan Larkin or his agent comes to him and says, I want to trade, Steve Yzerman goes, yeah, man, we'll see. This is my team. We'll see. That's not the way the world is right now. If your star player comes to you and requests a trade and he's your captain in the face of the franchise, you're doing something wrong. That's your fault. So instead of doing some inflection and some introspection and saying, what am I doing wrong? Like maybe I got to think about how I could be a better GM. Now he comes out and he goes, oh, we'll see what we can do. Whether we do it or not, I don't know. My job is to win. Well, you're not doing your job. You're failing at your job. So maybe look in the mirror and go, I stink. It's my fault. But he never did that because everybody just kept patting him on the back. And which gets to the point, At what point do you have to stop being loyal and start winning? At what point does Chris Ilitch just have to do the Patriots way and cut bait and fire? That should have been 3-4 years ago. At what point does the PR aspect come head to head with accountability? You know, at what point that should have happened a long time ago. And I was the one screaming it from the mountaintops. And maybe there was other people, but I felt like I took a lot of heat doing this. So I'm taking my victory lap. This should have happened years ago because everybody was just kissing his behind, but the results weren't there. And everybody kept saying, just wait until next year. This is a results-driven league. And he never produced any results. And when he was tasked with improving his team at critical times, he didn't do it. Oh, he brings in Peter Mrazek when they're on one of their best runs in years. And a fourth line schmuck. Like, that sends messages and it reverberates through the whole franchise. The way I don't believe in my team. This past season, he goes out and gets Justin Falk. Kind of good. Kind of. There's bigger fish to fry. Reports are he could have gotten Quinn Hughes. So if you're in that locker room and you go, gosh, he could have gotten Quinn Hughes if you would have just let go of a couple first rounders and a prospect and we get Justin Falk, that kind of is a downer. Not kind of, it is. Knowing that we could have had arguably the best defenseman on the planet, but Steve didn't want to give up some draft picks and a prospect. That sucks. That stings, especially if you're Dylan Larkin and you just won a gold medal with the guy and you probably talked about it in the locker room when you're at the Olympics. Hey, you want to come to Detroit? Cool. This is going to be great. I'm sure Steve will make that trade. No, didn't make that trade. So all in all, it came to a head. And you would expect Steve Yzerman, like I opened the show with, to just come out and say, that's my bad. You know what? I botched the last couple of years. I wanted to have a winning team, but it didn't happen. But like the coward that I did not know he is, he just slinked away in the night. So what's left for the Detroit Red Wings? Where do we go from here? Camp is just around the corner. There's no point in constructing any different players. The GM who comes in essentially will do nothing before camp. There's nothing he can do. There's very little free agents left in the market, and the ones that are still there, you don't want. So who will be the next GM? They have a couple options. Go completely off the board and get somebody who has no experience whatsoever, who maybe has a fresh look on the franchise. Or do what I fear that they're going to do and just hire one of his underlings, like a Chris Draper, or heaven forbid, a Nicholas Lidstrom, another former Hall of Fame, not former Hall of Famer, former Red Wing, current Hall of Famer guy who's just checks a lot of those boxes, but knows nothing about constructing a team and negotiating with players and the new way of hockey, which is hard to wrap your head around. Or do they give someone a shot who's, you know, done that, like a Tom Fitzgerald, Devils ex-GM, who isn't great in itself, or a Sean Horkoff, who was a GM in Grand Rapids, and they've been a pretty good team under his tenure. I don't know. But the chances of getting a good, and I say good GM, because I don't know if there's any good GMs out there, but the chances of hiring somebody that you really wanted, that was long gone. The big GM shuffle happened at the end of the season. So he really put them behind the eight ball. My dream situation is they hire Brendan Shanahan. How sweet would that be? Obviously, Brendan Shanahan played for the Detroit Red Wings, won at least multiple cups. I don't know. He won some cups here. Obviously, ran out of town by the Toronto Maple Leafs because he just botched that franchise, much like Steve Yzerman did to the Detroit Red Wings. But how apropos would it be for him to come to Detroit and try to resurrect his name and lead Detroit back to the promised land, the team that he was teammates with Steve Yzerman on? That would be just perfect because he would suck too. And he would just bring the ship down in flames. But the good thing about Brendan Shanahan is at least, like, he swings for the fences. Like, he goes out and he signs players. He signs everybody. And he spends all the money. Yes, he makes terrible decisions, but at least he tries. Yzerman, in my opinion, didn't even try. He didn't even give his team a chance to win. Yeah, they had a good team, but not good enough. Not nearly good enough. And you could tell on the ice, and you could tell off the ice by the players. And their every year-end meeting was just the same. Disheartening at the deadline. We didn't do enough. You know, I wish we would have had, you know, an extra couple bodies. It stunks. That was a good team we played against. So, all right. The top issues for the new GM. It's not like this guy's going to slide in to a nice, easy situation. Yes, he doesn't have pressing issues to sign players, but you have the Dylan Larkin situation. You have to re-sign Simon Edvinson. You got to worry about pending UFAs and DeBrincat and Kopp. You got a Marco Casper who's going to be an RFA at the end of the season. So there are big issues for this franchise. And if Dylan Larkin does get traded, if the new GM comes in and says, okay, there's no repairing this relationship, where does this franchise go? Do they just press reset and do a rebuild? I don't know if you can. You have one of the best young goaltenders in the league coming in Gustin. You have Norris caliber defenseman in Mo Sider. You have a pretty good forward in Lucas Raymond up front, and you got some decent prospects, not high-end prospects, like Emmett Finney's good and Marco Casper and Michael Neergaard are good. I don't think they're, I don't think they're insanely good. I think the people in Detroit think highly of them. I don't. I think they're okay. I think they're good second line guys, but they are good players. So the pieces are there. Can you really blow this up and start again? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where the new GM goes, but I think it's all based on who they get. If they get a Chris Draper or the Sean Horkoff, who's been in the organization, I think they're just going to do much of the same. Try to cobble together a team, not spend too much money, and hope for the best. Maybe they get a new GM who just kind of goes his own way and he has a good relationship with Ilitch and he allows him to spend some money, and then we can see some actual progression here in Detroit. But right now, I think we should shame Steve Yzerman and hope for the best in Detroit because they are an original six team. And as much as I desperately love when they fail, I would like to see them succeed, much like the Toronto Maple Leafs. When original six teams are successful and they're winning, it's good for hockey. People want to watch those teams. I want to watch those teams because it's fun to talk about them because they have such a rich history. But we'll see where it goes from here. Another original six news. Connor Bedard has signed. 5 years, $75 million. That's $15 million per. A lot of people are saying, oh, what a team-friendly deal. What a team-friendly deal. Great job, Connor Bedard, saving some money for other players. I get that. He could have probably gotten more money. If he wanted to push it, he probably could have gotten $20 million. Yeah, I don't know. If you look at this deal, it's a win-win for Connor Bedard. He gets his 15 schmil. He gets $75 million. He comes out looking like roses. But he's going to be a UFA when he is 25 years old. This whole contract negotiation by Kyle Davidson, not good. Yes, you sign him to a little bit less per year and $15 million. But when you look at their two best players right now, that's Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar, they both will be UFAs at primo time. Connor Bedard will be an unrestricted free agent when he's 26 years old. And Frankie Nazar will be an unrestricted free agent when he's 28 years old. I guess Frankie Nazar is not that bad. But you could have pushed it with Connor Bedard and got three more years out of him, and you didn't. To me, that's a loss. Because when this kid hits 26 years old, he arguably and rightfully could be the best player on the planet. And you lost that. You missed that. And you're going to have to re-sign him to a new ticket or just watch him, let him walk. Very rarely do you see a guy when he's 26 years old become an unrestricted free agent. But we'll see it with Connor Bedard. So another strike for Kyle Davidson. Good job, Kyle. Way to blow this one too. You're a franchise guy, and maybe you couldn't put pressure on him. I get that, and players have the leverage these days, but it seems like all the other young players, they signed eight-year contracts. They got the deal done. Maybe you had to give him a little more money. I get that. But you give that guy the money. This screams to me that Connor kind of doesn't want to be there. Because a guy who's sold on the franchise and sold on the GM and where the team's headed, he signs an eight-year deal because he likes being in Chicago. He wants to be with this organization. But if you're 21 years old and you've just gone through 3 years of hell with this team, and you're renegotiating your first big contract, and you're taking a pay cut to have less term, that means he doesn't like Chicago, you guys. That's what it means. So for everyone out there saying, oh, Connor's such a great guy, like he gave us a great deal. No. He got exactly what he wanted. He got his 5 years so he can punch in and punch out, and after 5 years, he's gone. This is my prediction. I bet you Kyle Davidson was offering him 8 years at $20 million. You bet your ass he was. But Connor Bedard said, no, I don't want eight. I want five. That's it. That's it. That's as long as I'll go. Take four. Nah, five. Four, I'll be an RFA and you'll still have control over me. I'll be five and I'll be the youngest unrestricted free agent possible. And I will be the biggest talent ever to hit UFA at age 25. That's insane. Like, that's a huge win for Connor Bedard. And this is a huge L for Kyle Davidson. Another one, chalk it up. I know he signed for that long, but he's under team control until he's 25. So Connor knew he was there until at least 25. He played the system right. He played Kyle Davidson perfectly, and he got out of there at 25. So unless this team dramatically turns the corner and all of a sudden starts to win, he's gone. So all you Blackhawks fans, I love you. I wish I was still there. Get ready. Because you think Connor McDavid, that's going to be a seismic issue when he leaves Edmonton, maybe this year, guaranteed next year. Connor Bedard, the number one overall pick, will be gone in 5 years, if not sooner. Because there's no way in anybody's mind that this team is going to be good in the next 2, 3, 4 years. This roster sucks. And it has there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no silver lining on this cloud. When you look at the Blackhawks and when you look at what they have in the system, there's no getting better. Oh, but they got a lot of money. They got a lot of money. Yeah, but like Tyler Bertuzzi's on their first line. Ryan Donato's on their second line. This team stinks. They absolutely suck. Oh, they got Bowen Byram. I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole again because we all know they suck. And they will continue to suck. And they just botched their fourth overall pick from this season. By the way, did I run down the fourth overall pick? I did. So Kyle Davidson, if you're listening, Will Smith, Luke Hughes, Lucas Raymond, Brady Tkachuk, Cale Makar, Mitch Marner, Sam Bennett. You could have had that caliber of player. But you got a Bowen Byram, who's good. He was a fourth overall pick in 2019. You could have had that kid for cheaper, for younger, and for better. So it's a cruel, cruel world. And the original six teams are floundering, and they need some help. Rangers, Leafs, Canadians, they're my hope. We got to do a show on the Montreal Canadiens because of all these massive contracts, $18 million, $15 million, $12.5 million. Go look at the Montreal Canadiens team and their salary cap and the term that they have these guys locked up for. It is a masterclass in contract negotiation and signing and roster just construction by Kent Hughes. This guy deserves some kind of award because the more these bad contracts keep getting handed out and the more the term gets shorter, he's got Suzuki and Caulfield and Slakovsky and Demidov and Dobson and Hudson and Matheson all locked up long-term for very manageable amounts of money. Like, it's insane. Their highest paid player is Noah Dobson at 9.5. Ivan Demidov, who's 20 years old, who's an absolute stud, just signed an 8-year, $9 million contract. That's how you do it. That's how you do it, young GMs. You see a talent, you address a need, you let him play 1 year, and you go, okay, you put up 62 points in 82 games, and you're only 20 years old, and you overwhelm him with money in term. And you go, 8 years, $9 million. That's over $7 million, Ivan. You're a poor kid from Russia who can barely scratch two nickels together in Moscow, wherever the hell you're from. This is big time money. Take it. And then they take it. And then you own him for the next 8 years. Same thing happened with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield. They saw Cole Caulfield and they go, okay, first year, pretty good. Second year, better. Oh, 65 points, 70 points. Okay. Hey, Cole, 8 years, 7.5 per or 7.8 per. That's over $60 million. Let's do it. Yes, you make mistakes sometimes, but more often than not, the way things are going, they seem to work out. And the Montreal Canadiens will be very, very dangerous this year. They're just a good, good team, and they still have $10 million in cap space. So take notes, you guys. Montreal Canadiens, yes. Every other original six team, no. Well, the Bruins, they're out there. But anyways, everybody, thank you for listening. It was a long time coming for the Red Wings. I wish it would have ended differently, and I wish Steve Yzerman would have paid the piper and face the firing squad, but it is what it is. I'm glad he's gone. Hopefully they can resurrect this team and get on to greener pastures. And I appreciate everybody listening. And I'll talk to everybody later on this week. Cheers, everybody.